Hi everyone, welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley. I am so excited for my guest today. He just wrote an incredible book, and he actually knows my mother-in-law. So this is a personal connection, and I can't wait to have what I'm sure is going to be a really enlightening conversation. First couple quick announcements, head over to the links in my show notes. You are going to find a lot there. You'll find ways to connect with my amazing guest. You'll find ways to connect with me on social media, ways to sponsor the podcast, ways to find my own book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality, my courses, coaching, free downloads. There's just so much there. So go check out the links. And as always, this podcast is part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. Sounds kind of weird that a newspaper has a podcast network, but we are doing massive things in the personal development realm. We have an event pretty much every month with incredible headliners like Joseph McClendon, Les Brown, Dr. Joe Vitale, Mary Morrissey, just amazing people that are changing the world. So come be a part of it. What if the one thing keeping you stuck is the way you think? Welcome to Change Your Mind with Chris Ashley, the podcast where science meets spirituality and mindset becomes your most powerful tool for transformation. I'm Chris Ashley, author of Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality, trainer, speaker, and lifelong seeker. For years, I battled trauma, depression, anger, chronic illness, low self-worth, and the weight of old stories. Until I discovered how to rewire my mind, reconnect with my divine nature, and consciously create a new reality from the inside out. This show is here to help you do the same. Each week, we explore the intersection of personal development, spirituality, and science, diving into topics like healing, emotional mastery, entrepreneurship, resilience, and the quantum nature of reality. You'll hear powerful stories, gain practical tools, and real conversations that will help you change your perspective, get unshakable confidence, and live the vision your soul has always known is possible. Whether you're navigating a major life shift, building your dream business, or seeking deep healing and alignment, you're in the right place. So if you're ready to break through, take back your power, and create a life on your terms, this is your moment. Let's break free from the patterns that hold us back, awaken to who we truly are, and rise. Your transformation starts now. So with me today, I have Mike Morrison. Mike currently serves as a management consultant and author with 10 books published. His most recent book, Everydayness, helps us to rethink and reclaim our days in the most human ways. So welcome, Mike. I'm so happy you're here.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad. My mother-in-law is an amazing woman who's also very spiritual, and she connected us, and we totally clicked in their pre-call, and I'm excited you're here.
Thank you.
So I always start my episodes off the same way, and that is by asking my guests, what is their origin story? So what is it that put you on this path to eventually write Everydayness?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I think it's a gift my mom gave me, but I've been kind of an observer in life, always kind of slowing to see what was going on, asking questions, being a little bit curious. And that was definitely my mom, not my dad, but it was definitely a gift my mom gave me. And during the pandemic, right, like almost overnight, all of our routines, everything was lost. And what was interesting as we tried to remake our lives in all the chaos and challenge, I would notice that sometimes those things that were routine before all of a sudden started to take on meaning, right? Or the potential for meaning. It was kind of paradoxical. And so in this era, a couple of years where we could have been lost, there was this rich opportunity to kind of rethink our days. So that's where Everydayness was born, is out of the ashes of the pandemic.
It's so funny. I wrote my book in the pandemic too. And it seems like there's kind of two camps of people that I've met. It's during the pandemic, the people who were like, okay, I have this time on my hands. I'm going to like take every course I can. I'm going to create all these projects. And then there were like people were thriving. And then there were other people who just kind of like needed to kind of go within a little bit more. But I'm definitely in the camp with you. So tell me about the book. Maybe we start there. Like what is everydayness to you?
Yeah, it's, you know, I ran into this quote. Let me just see if I see her name here real quick. It's Annie Dillard said a long time ago, you know, how we live our days, of course, is how we live our lives. Mm-hmm. And it made me start thinking, you know, the day is actually a perfect container for living a life. But we made it way too complex, way too much screen time, no beginning, no end. The first thing we see, you know, in the morning is a screen. The last thing we check before drifting off into the night is a screen. So that perfect container became, you know, just a continuous flow of sometimes activity. So the thought was, how, because we know this stuff, and I'm sure a lot of the people watching know these things, but somehow they got lost in all of our busyness. But it started to look at both the science and art, doing a lot of research, but the science and art of how should we live our days. And it's not about being efficient or time management or fitting one more thing in, you know, that would not be the right end. But it was more about what would that purposeful life look like, right? And again, not being overly, you know, efficient in any way, but looking at the science and the art, and the people like you, people who've been pursuing that question as well.
So you were talking about during the pandemic, your routine totally changed. And then like, after you started thinking about this, like what did your days start to look like during the pandemic? Like how did you shift after you were just noticing all this?
You know, there was anybody knows me says would not describe me as someone who's mindful. They would describe me as one of those people who's, yeah, was, you know, really trying to get a lot done, you know, not multitasking, but really having that sense of purpose and drive. And I think one of the things that the pandemic did was kind of allow me to do that reset. So instead of just having a morning routine where I drank my coffee and got my to-do list going and got into the day, it felt more like a ritual where I could kind of slow to a new kind of to a new rhythm because I had more time. And as I was thinking through the book and doing the research, I could kind of get a little bit lost in it, which was nice. I remember seeing this little quote on the internet. It's like, you know, this is like 1 year into the pandemic. It's like, you know, extroverts, don't worry, this will soon be over, but introverts, stop smiling. And I'm an introvert. So it was much easier for me to be one of those people who could all of a sudden take advantage of this slower time and the lack of connectivity that kind of disappeared, at least for a while.
So what's your ritual now? Now that the pandemic's over and you're back in the real world, so to say, like how have you brought this into your life?
Yeah, a much more deliberate morning routine that ends with kind of my setting intentions. And I, you know, one of the things I do now is since I have a big to-do list, lots of little things, not all of them are important, but a lot of little things have to get done. I got to get my taxes in, but I draw a line in the middle of a page. And one thing that's really helped me is above the line, I just have 1 to 3 intentions. And these are the things that really define the day for me, define the everydayness. And what's amazing, what I've learned about myself is those things always get done. The things below the line, get my taxes done, make sure I, you know, buy more coffee or whatever. Those things usually get done too. I can be efficient. I can check things off. But as the day ends, I really kind of get to look at those 1 to 3 things I wanted to be more intentional about. And again, amazingly, they always tend to get done. And they give me that sense of closure. So I can move some of the other little things forward, you know, but the having that intentionality as the beginning of the day was one of the things that made a big difference for me. Someone was always trying to do way too much, but having that focus and then actually having an end of the day ritual too, that allows me to kind of start to slow down, move some things forward, but have a little bit of that reflection time. And I find that's where I'm most innovative, because I'm not trying to do things anymore, complete things, in that little bit of slowdown. Remember my daughter, what kind of got me excited about, my daughter was living in New York at the time, and she was, there was this little coffee shop where she would go, when you leave your apartment in New York in the morning, you're gone for the day. So she would go to this one coffee shop before going to class and get her coffee and get caffeinated. But this coffee shop had a routine at 7 p.m. because a lot of the same people would come back during the day. It was their home room. They had this ring a bell and they had laptops down. And the idea is, all right, stop working, stop screen time, and make yourself accessible in our little community. So I've gotten much better at bookending my days and actually having an end to them.
So that's so cool about the coffee shop. I love that. That's really, really cool. And I'm sure like everyone gets to know each other and probably purposely goes back at that time so they can be part of that. So your evening ritual, does it tie back to the intentions you set? And I guess for the intentions, is it intentions like be present or, you know, like things like that? Or is it more related to your to-do list?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. You know, one of the things I try to coach around is not just doing, but being. So I'll try to sneak in there a little bit of a to be. And particularly if I'm feeling like I need to just be a little bit more present, you know, I'll put that in there. But it'll often be, you know, get one more chapter done, or make this, you know, I do consulting, so make this client connection or make progress on this presentation that's upcoming. But I really try to focus in on the thing that's really part of my life and work, and then let the other stuff settle below the line. It gets done. But there's that sense of wholeness and completion when you feel like you're doing the stuff that matters most. It's above the line, it's visible. And I tend to be a visual person. If I didn't have the list to look at, if I didn't have something above the line, my mind would, I'd be distracted. I'd go down some rabbit hole. I would find some other, you know, other thing to keep me busy.
I love that because, you know, like I have a 13-month-old, we've talked about that, and I only have childcare a couple days a week. So it's like my to-do lists on those days are crazy because I have like so many projects going on. And sometimes it can be overwhelming. It's like, oh, I didn't get through like 3/4 of my list today. But so I really like the idea of like sectioning off a couple things. So it's like, okay, I feel accomplished for just doing those like really big things, and then everything else is going to get done the next time. Right. Yeah. So what kind of advice do you have for people who are listening that might be, you know, kind of overwhelmed with their days or like don't even know how to get started? Like, what kind of first steps can people take?
Yeah, it's, you know, there's, imagine those days where you don't have a sense of purpose, right? There's nothing to look forward to. There's nothing I'm doing that tends to matter. Those are our worst days, right? Those are our worst days. There's no amount of coffee or fun that can turn those around. So, you know, having that sense of purpose, having that sense of intention, those one or two things, you know, I'm going to be applying for this job if I don't have one. I'm going to be, you know, making these small steps in this area. But it helps to have that sense of purpose going into the day, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be huge, but purpose evolves over time. But in everydayness, the idea is every day I'm going to do my best to at least start with some sense of purpose. Setting those couple of intentions can pull us through the day. There's nothing like I need to be somewhere too. So sometimes it's setting an appointment for yourself that knows that at this point I'm meeting a friend and we're going to discuss something. One thing we know for sure too, and you mentioned being like a new parent, it's exhausting. It's emotionally exhausting. It's very purposeful. It's like, gosh, this is what I always wanted to be. Always wanted to be a mom. I love being a mom, but I'm emotionally exhausted. So that one of the things we can build into the day is not only that sense of purpose, but that appreciation time. And it's being able to set those little time periods where we do get a break and we can kind of breathe or get a walk around the block, actually drink our cup of tea, really, you know, really experience it. But without that appreciative time, without that kind of connection, we can feel there's a sense of meaning in their lives, but we're just not happy. Mm-hmm. So I always say, you know, there's this combination of being both happy, you know, and filtering that in, and then being purposeful, having that sense of meaning. And if you can have both of those kind of in the day, life is good.
Yeah, it's a good day. Yeah, it's a really good day. And I like how you were talking about taking action too. You know, you've read my book too. That's something that I feel really passionate about. And you're kind of saying something similar. It's that idea of like setting an intention, like having a goal, having a vision, and then it's not just enough to like write it down. You have to like move towards it. Right. So talk to me about like, how is taking action important to you?
What precedes action, right? Because I certainly would fall in that camp of probably overreacting to things and not thinking things through, particularly in those days where you feel like your to-do list is overwhelming and trying to get through it. But I think one of the things, particularly in this new age where we're losing our capacity to empathize, you know, it's well researched. You know, again, way too much screen time, and it just kind of rewires our brain. But the word I would use, and the one I kind of promote with others, is this notion of thoughtfulness, because it's this idea of what precedes action is I've thought it through. You know, I'm not just reacting, I'm responding. And when you think things through, you tend to want to act more on it. It's like, oh no, this is the right thing. I got to call Chris right now. But what creates that spur is this idea that I've kind of thought it through. And thoughtfulness also kind of connotes caring. And I really care about this idea, or I really care about Chris. So when you put thoughtfulness into play, it kind of promotes action. And if you think about it, we would not describe, you know, we hold that word as special. We would not describe someone as thoughtful who was overreactive or not kind or not, you know, fully present when they're with us. It seems almost like a passive word, but it's actually really powerful, you know, when we can kind of slow to that thoughtfulness pacing in our lives.
Yeah, I like that. You totally described me a little bit as like that person that's just like, oh, I have this idea, I'm gonna like just jump in, right? I think there's a lot of value in slowing down and thinking things through, especially when you're trying to make a connection with someone, right? Or like before you press that send key on the email. So how have you noticed this changing your connections as you've like put this kind of thoughtfulness into play?
If you think about it, the art of conversation, making those connections, making deeper connections has become elusive, because we have, you know, we can text, we can email, you know, and there's some reasons for that. You know, conversation is messy. If you think about trying to build a connection with a workmate or a new friend or someone, a new acquaintance, conversation is super messy. You're having to make like 100 little micro decisions as you go along. It's like, is this conversation proceeding? Should I change the topic? Is it too much about me? Is it too much? And where should I divulge more? Should I share about? So we're making all these decisions, little mini decisions to keep that relationship going. Obviously, with a best friend, we don't have to do that. You know, we just get to be who we are. Yeah. But that's why in this busy world, we often feel like intuitively we don't have time for investing in conversation. And so I've done a couple things, you know, and again, it's I kind of coach around it. But one is reframing time. I actually do have time. I do have time to have a deeper conversation or have a messy conversation that I'm not quite sure is going, but I'm going to be fully there for it. But I remind people that we only live our life in moments, in a sense, and a moment is an actual unit of time. It's 3 seconds. You know, it's 1001, 1002, 1003. So there's a depth to a moment. And we talk about moments in that way. It's like, you know, we seize the moment, or it was that special moment where I knew exactly what to say or what to do. But we don't remember days, but we do remember the moments that make them up. And the cool thing is we actually have 20,000 waking moments every day. So after 8 hours of sleep, which I'm sure everyone's getting, right?
Definitely with babies.
But we have 20,000 waking moments. So I use that to kind of help me and help others kind of redirect that. No, I have plenty of time. I have plenty of time. Because it only takes a couple moments to make someone's day. It only takes a couple moments to slow and have that special insight. And if we kind of have that mindset, no, I've got plenty of time to get the stuff that matters most done, we can be more fully present, right? We can spend a little more time in that conversation and trying to make that connection. And one last little thing on that too, it's like even things like sadness, you know, there's a real power to it. Sadness is, you know, we'll often experience a little bit of that every day, a little sense of loss. And, you know, when we can slow, you know, in fact, sadness is the emotion we feel most. And it slows us down. It tends to make us stop and think and reflect. And, you know, maybe a friend is going through a tough time, or maybe I am. But it keeps us off of just overreacting, and it can slow us down in some real, real powerful ways. And usually the things where we have a sense of loss are the things that we love, right? The things that we love the most. So I think part of everydayness is if we can really start rethinking our time, we can take even emotions like sadness and use them to our advantage.
That's really beautiful. I love that idea of like reframing sadness as something positive, because it helps slow us down and be present in the moment. And in that way, it's a gift, right? That's really cool. And I also love that you reframed how you would think about time, right? Because, you know, like we create our own reality, right? And when you are in that flow state, like time slows down anyway, right? So if we think about it as like these moments stretched out, and by the way, I didn't even know a moment was like an actual measurable thing. So thank you for teaching me that. But yeah, when we think about it as like these moments stretched out, it's like, yeah, I do have a lot of time in my day to get things done. And just like reframing it in that way just kind of makes you relax a little bit, right? And like exhale and be like, oh yeah, it's all going to get done. That's really cool. I really like that. It reminds me of, I'm pretty sure it was a podcast guest. Someone said to me recently about how like, I'm sure you can relate to this. And, you know, I go on a lot of podcasts as a guest, and I'm sure you do too. And you kind of start to say the same thing over and over a little bit, right? Because you're doing your teaching, you're giving your intro. Yeah. And I had a guest the other day that was like, yeah, I try and do something different every time and like don't think about and don't say my like script, and instead just like really be present with the person, really listen, and then just authentically respond, right? And I was like, yeah, like that's like the art of conversation, right? And that's really truly honoring the other person and being present. So I've been trying to practice that too. And it's kind of hard to get out of that like script in your head, but like that can just change the way you connect with someone as well.
Right. Very good. I love that.
Yeah. So is there any kind of, I don't know, like exercise or takeaway if someone's listening right now that they can try at home, or anything you can like kind of share or walk us through?
Yeah. Yeah, and what's been helpful to me is I try to translate everydayness in these little, you know, 1 and 2 minute things I'll put up on TikTok and other, just it keeps me going, but it answers that question. What are the little things I could do every day, every day? So a couple thoughts, one great everydayness strategy is you're already doing a lot of things that are pretty good. And the idea is you can build on them. You can, attach things to it. So if you have a morning routine that starts with coffee and doing your to-do list, well, maybe you build on that. You might do a little reading because reading always opens you up, 10 minutes, a little bit of reflection time, a little bit of whatever you do for mindfulness, but you can build on those things. So when you have routines, they kind of create stability. And then the idea is make those routines not just routine-like, but kind of, where you can, you turn them into rituals. I had a friend during the pandemic and, she had two little kids at home and it was just chaos. She says it was probably like the most stressful point in her life. And she would go to her to do dishes because she had to get these dishes done. And she kept breaking glasses, because she's rushing through it, trying to get it done. And finally, through some thinking it through, she slowed to a more purposeful dishwashing. So she had her AirPods in and she'd use this for a time of prayer or just thinking things through, just listening to music. But her back is to the world, And she said, my sink has become my sanctuary. So she would talk about the feeling of the warm, sudsy water in her hands, right? She loved kind of taking care of each glass and then placing it in the rack, getting into her music, being separate from the world for a bit and using this space as a sanctuary. So I have fun with a lot of people. It's like, say, where's your sanctuary? Is it folding socks? Is it doing, where can you actually not just make it a routine, but actually find a space that allows you to just get out of your head or do something? Is it a walk around the block? So routines and rituals kind of create stability in the days. And they also, if they're done right, kind of free us up then to when we can have a little bit of extra time for doing that ideation or having a little more time for the spirit where we actually can kind of feel like we're part of this world.
So what I really love about what you just shared is you're not trying to change anyone's routine, right? You're not like shaming them because you started off talking about how like we start our days on screens, we end our days on screens. And I thought you were going to answer that question by saying something like, oh, instead of picking up your phone first, like meditate or something. Because like you said, everyone has heard that, right? And we all know that we shouldn't be looking at our phones like first thing in the morning and right before bed. But to be told like, don't look at your phone first. Like sometimes that's really hard for people or they feel like shame about it or they can't commit to that yet. So the fact that you're like, we'll just build on it, like spend a few minutes doing something else as well, or turn this thing that you have to do every day into something really mindful where you get to like really slow down and experience it. And I think that people will resonate with that because you're not telling them they're doing anything wrong, right? You're just like, here's something you can add. So I appreciate that. Yeah, that's cool. That's super cool. Have any of your clients come up with any other cool little, what did you call the sink there? What was the word you used?
My sink is my sanctuary.
My sanctuary. Yeah. Any other sanctuaries that you've heard about that have kind of been fun?
Yeah, usually, the things that people really resonate with and they'll come back and say, okay, that was a keeper. Is this notion of not only starting the day with a sense of intentionality and building on that, and there's two other parts, is ending the day, not just continuously, streaming and doom scrolling, but having some little bit of ritual that allows you to be laptop down and to reach some kind of closure. It doesn't have to be spiritual, but for some people that's because they're starting to really wear down. That is the spiritual time of their day. They really feel this kind of sweet, sweet vulnerability that opens them up. And once they kind of bookend the day, we'll talk about the middle of the day. What would you do that would get you energized again, that allow you to kind of feel like you're going to finish the day strong. But when you bookend the day, you're actually ending the day. You have a sense of, you know, this day was good. There was a little bit of sadness, but this was a good day. I learned something, and tomorrow I'm ready. I'm ready for tomorrow as opposed to this continuous flow. So by giving people that sense of bookending and as they start to build routines, they feel a little bit more in control, feel a little more human. And then when they can start to even build into the middle of the day, they'll say things like, you know, 3 o'clock is a disaster for me. I'm tired. And that's when I work out now. I found that if I can take my 30-minute walk, then it re-energizes me. So, you know, if we can start to compartmentalize the day, we can start putting things into it. This is when I'm most creative. This is when I'm most relational. And this is how I tend to end the day. And if you can have little routines and rituals, right, that we can count on, right, that we can count on, it gives a day kind of a special flow.
I really like that. And you can even like set your timer on your phone so that you like have to take that time. And what a cool thing. It's like, oh, I feel tired at this point. Like and you could also like maybe sit and meditate for 10 minutes too. Like you can have quiet time too. I was just thinking, based off like what I said before, when I was talking about I love that you build on someone's routine. There's this cool thing that my husband and I have started doing at night. So we both like love ChatGPT. Like we use it for like everything. I don't even use Google anymore. Like I'll use Google as like a fact checker for ChatGPT, but that's it. But one thing we started doing, I write in my book about how we create our manifest memoir. So we've plugged all of that into our ChatGPT. So every night we ask ChatGPT, come up with a story of a day in my future life. And it's amazing. It's so cool. And you can give it different prompts. We're like, oh, today, like we want to take Jackson on a vacation, and then you can like keep modifying it. So it comes up with this like story from the moment that, you know, we always wake up with the sun filtering in through our room, and then it walks us through breakfast, and then it walks us through like our family adventure and like work time and these great deals we're getting. But it's such a cool thing to read each night because it's like you're living in this story. And it helps you manifest it, but it's also like kind of incorporating technology. So I don't know. I've never talked about that in the show. It's such a, I'm like loving it. It's so much fun.
I love that. I'm going to try some, you know.
And do it. It's so fun.
I know. And I've been finding, it's like, I have this weird relationship now. It's like there is this other chat. It's a person. I thank it. I have this emotional connection to it. And I'm thinking, is there something wrong with me here? But I love it too. And I just got into it like last July, and then it's just grown. But you just gave me a great idea. I have found it has this, and every time I come back to it, it knows me. It builds in sometimes stuff I don't want it to build in because it's like we have this special relationship. It really is cool.
Yeah, it's cool. And you can also like upload. So I've uploaded like my book manuscript to it, and I put in like podcast transcripts and stuff. So it gets to know you even more. So then you can be like, oh, help me with this email from me. Or like, how would I, the daily routine thing. Cause it's just cool. It's like another way for you to be able to like visualize the future you want.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. So is there anything else we didn't cover today that you really want to get out there for people?
Those are kind of the, I think the highlights. I think I'm just looking at some of my notes here.
Doesn't have to be like related to your book, like anything.
Yeah.
You want to put out into the universe.
Yeah. I think the one thing I discovered, and I put into my book was this notion. I like this notion of Kairos versus Chronos time. The Greeks had two different notions of time. Chronos time is clock time, and we're on clock time. It's like, I gotta hurry to get this stuff done. I gotta get through my email, and that's fine. Be efficient, get through it, knock it out. You're on Chronos time. But Kairos time is when we're, you know, it's not clock time. We let time evolve. And so it's been real helpful to me. It's like if I'm sitting in front of someone and I just came from redoing my email, I'm still, my head's in Chronos time. It's mm-hmm. wants to be efficient. And so I can give myself this a little reminder, you know, be in Kairos time, take your time. This is another human being here. But the Greeks used it for, it's that magical moment where the archer pulls the, you know, the bow back. And there's that one little moment where it's perfect to let go. And so you talk to people who knit, they'll say, yeah, you get into this little rhythm. It's Kairos time when you know when to, you know, you're not even thinking, you're just letting it evolve. Spiritual time is all Kairos time where, but often we have to kind of make that shift during the day when we're trying to get stuff done to, you know, taking three deep breaths and then being accessible. But I found that with people that having that little prompt in their head, it's all right, I'm going to make a little bit of shift here. It's going to take me a minute, but I'm going to make this little shift just to be more fully present to knitting, to being with my dog, my baby, my friend, myself in this moment.
Yeah, it's so true that it takes a moment for you to kind of like shift gears and be like, okay, what am I doing now? And I like the idea of putting like a name to it like that, because then it's like, okay, like that part of me I can turn off and I can just be here. Like when you were describing the knitting, it makes me think of like being in the flow. And like as a writer, you've probably experienced that too, when you're like just in the flow and it feels like you're just downloading information, right? It's just like, where is this even coming from? But it's like 12 hours can pass at your computer and you like don't even notice. That's the best feeling.
One thing I grabbed behind me too, which was just, you know, these are kind of cool, you can get them different minutes and things. But what's cool, it reminds you that, you know, with the sand passing, these are moments when you have hourglasses, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, clock time, which is digital. But it always a reminder of me. I'll give my, put a 30-minute one out and I'll see the sand kind of flowing through, but it'll kind of remind me to be in Kairos time, you know, as I'm maybe giving myself 30 minutes to plan a vacation or 20 minutes to work deeply on a chapter. But I found that helps people too, is, you know, just to, when they're doing something, it's kind of like that old Zen thing. When you're in the shower, are you in the shower? You know, or is your mind someplace else, but do you allow yourself to fully be in the shower?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I a couple of thoughts come up. It's like one, Eckhart Tolle always talking about like doing versus being. And he's always like, I think I'm too far on the being spectrum, because if you're too far on the being, like you don't like move forward, right? Like there has to be like growth and learning and like action. But if you're like too far on the doing, you're not present, right? You're kind of missing that moment. Yeah, and I'm also thinking about like the idea of like, are you present in the shower? Because there's that mindfulness where you're like, kind of like the sink thing, where you're like feeling the soap and feeling the water and just like really there and the steam. But then honestly, like for me sometimes, letting my mind kind of just like wander and like process the day is so necessary. Because it's like, it's almost like all this kind of gets like jumbled up in there and it just needs to like untangle and flow out. So then I can just kind of let it go. Do you find that too?
Oh, totally. And we remind people that their powerful unconscious is always working. That's why when you're in the shower and you finally let go, you love the warmth on your back and you finally let go and you're there, you're in the shower. And then you get this great, your subconscious rewards you with some idea on what you needed to untangle. It's like all of a sudden, oh my God, now I won't remember that. I got to get out of the shower here real quick. But yeah, it's the subconscious is, and that's why when we go to bed, we really want to do a little prep. It's like reading our kids a story. There's huge research that story time before bedtime sends them into the dark night in a real special way that's really powerful. So kids at risk, the one thing they do for them is they read to them at night, and it gives them a chance to restore. And it, goes to the heart of this powerful subconscious we have that keeps working. You know, it's the reticular activating system, right? It's whenever we start to wish or program for something, it starts to appear. So that's why the night has to be a little bit precious to us and not just filled with expectations of others.
So what does it do for kids exactly, reading that? Because story time at night before bed with my son is like my favorite thing ever. But it's cool to know that there's like research done behind that.
Yeah, I'll send you, I've written about it, because when we wrote our little kids' books, we wanted to really arm parents with this idea of is read your kids all the time, but particularly at night. And then it becomes a ritual. But what it does is it loads their subconscious with these positive thoughts that they take into their dream world.
That's cool.
And as opposed to, you want to get their clothes set up for the next day if they're a little bit older and all that stuff, get the chores done in a sense to free up their mind. But I'll send you the little article we wrote that shows how the research and how, again, it's used with kids who've been traumatized or in war zones and stuff. If they could do any one thing, it would be read to them at night. So when they get that 8 to 10 hours of sleep, the subconscious is working on these positive things. That's really kind of helping to shape their identity.
That's really amazing. Yeah, I would love to see the article. I love that you did that. And I love that you wrote kids' books. I'm excited to read them to my son too. Mike, it was such a pleasure having you on. Thank you so, so much for taking the time. Thank you for the work you're doing in this world. If you want to take a moment and just let people know how they can find the book, how they can connect with you, I'm sure people would love to know.
Yeah, one simple way is just go to everydayness.com, you know, www.everydayness.com. On there, there's a simple click if you're interested in the book. The Kindle version is often discounted. It's often just 99 cents. But if you're interested in that, that's great. But on my website, there's lots of ideas. And I post a little mini idea about every 2 days or so on TikTok. And the TikTok feed is on my site, too. So if some of these ideas resonate, I get them down into 1 and 2 minute little things that you can take into your world every day. So if that interests you, just go to everydayness.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And that's going to be in the show notes as well. If this resonated, please send it to someone who you think would find it helpful. Like, comment, share, subscribe. Let's all just help raise the consciousness of humanity and make the world a better place. Thank you all so much. Have a good rest of your day.